Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show online at edexcellence.net. And now please join me in welcoming my co-host, a rising superstar in the education policy world, Janie Skull.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm well, Janie. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Excited to be here in the seat.
I mean, Janie, you've gone from intern Janie to then rate that reform Janie to co-host Janie in such a short amount of time.
It's true.
Leapfrogging, by the way, some of us. Stuck in the question answering seat, asking seat for a while.
You just got such an NPR voice. It's fantastic. Yeah.
Exactly, Mickey. Yeah. You know, you don't want the Peter principle, you know, where people get promoted beyond their, you know, their strongest, you know, talents. I mean, this is people get promoted to be principal, for example, when they're a great teacher, and you want to keep them in that teacher role. They become a principal, and they might not be ready for it. Yeah. That's what the case is with you, Mickey. But on Janie's case here, Janie, she's ready for the big leagues. Just like, what's the name of that pitcher we have here in town?
Steven Strasburg.
Whereas Mickey said, I'm the Justin Bieber of
Fordham. Yes. But that reference went completely over my head.
So sorry.
This is what happens when you have a six-month-old at home. Okay, so lots to cover. Even though it's the summer, a lot of exciting things happening, including a big report out this week by Fordham. So let's get started, Mickey, with Pardon the Gadfly.
Okay, speaking of that report, so it is out this week, the State of State Standards and the Common Core in 2010. Mike, enlighten us. What are the key findings? What should our audience know about?
All right, so in this study, we look at the quality of state English and mathematics standards. We have been doing this at Fordham for 13 years now. This is our latest report. We haven't done it since 2005. And then we also review the Common Core standards, the final one. So what do we find out? We gave the final Common Core standards an A- in math, a B+ in English. Those honor grades are pretty impressive from our tough Fordham reviewers. That makes the Common Core standards clearly superior than the standards in place in most of the states, in about 37 states in English, 39 in math. There are about 11 states plus DC where it is too close to call in math, in 11 states in English where it's too close to call, meaning they got very close grades to the Common Core. And there are three jurisdictions whose English standards we think are better than the Common Core's: mm-hmm. California, Indiana, and the District of Columbia. So that's the main finding. You know, for most of the country, then deciding whether to move to the Common Core, at least on the merits of the standards themselves, is not a tough decision. But you know, for about 11, 12 states, they do have some tougher decisions to make.
And for any of those that are clearly superior to the Common Core, mm-hmm. have any of those states already gone and adopted the Common Core?
Actually, not yet. Okay. But there's a big debate going on right now in California, and it looks like what they are likely to do is to adopt the Common Core, but supplement the Common Core with some of their own standards, which makes sense.
Because the states that scored better were Massachusetts.
California, Indiana, and the District of Columbia. Okay. Now, Massachusetts also making a big decision this week as of our press time. We don't know how that'll come out, but they will likely adopt as well. And like California, they may supplement their standards with some of the things they already have on the books right now.
Yeah, and I think it really just does kind of bolster the fact that so many states at this point have already adopted it, mm-hmm. but the majority of them have made the right decision.
Right.
You know, there are people out there that'll probably say, you know, we don't want to be a part of the national standards movement, and we don't think our state should have done this. But, you know, when it's clearly inferior, it's pretty hard to argue with.
Very good point, Janie. Wow, she is good. And I on that point, I should say, you know, before the Common Core adoptions, the national average for state standards, in our judgment, was a C for English, a C for math. With the 25 states that have already adopted now, that national average has already gone up to a B+ for math and a B for English. So just in the matter of the last month or so, we have raised the bar by at least a letter grade. That's not bad.
Is that assuming that the states faithfully implement the standards that they've chosen to adopt? Or?
Well, sure, although it doesn't mean that the states have faithfully implemented their own standards. So
fair enough.
Yes, this is just looking at aspirations as standards. That, of course, is only the beginning of the story.
Fair enough.
Question number two, Mickey.
Okay. Governor Chris Christie in New Jersey has put his fist down and decided to cap the salaries of most superintendents in the state. He imposed a limit for superintendents in districts of students up to 10,000 students, where the range is now somewhere between $125,000 and $175,000 per year, with a possibility for 15% merit pay based on student test scores. All in all, the proposal is geared to basically save the state money, so that the merit pay is not going to come out of extra funds, but rather is going to come from current funds.
All right. So bottom
line
is,
this a good thing or a bad thing?
Okay. In case that was at all confusing. So, right. Governor wants to cap superintendent pay. is Andy Smerick going to get capped in New Jersey when he goes in and tries to implement this? What do you think here, Janie? Is this a good idea?
I mean, I think, yeah, if they're trying to save money, yeah, this makes sense. There's a ton of districts in New Jersey. There's plenty of room for kind of, I mean, on some level consolidating. I think that would be an important step. But short of that, yes, I think it's kind of important that, you know, these people are making very large salaries for very small school districts. And on some level, if you need to cut somewhere, yeah, you need to cut salaries. So,
you know, now there's people that say, look, this is impinging on local autonomy, you know, and if you want to get talented people, particularly in a top job, you know, even if it's a small district, you're still talking about running a multi-million dollar enterprise. You should be able to pay competitively. New Jersey's, you know, wealthy state. You know, these salaries aren't out of line with what a lot of people are making. But, you know, Governor Christie has a message that people say, well, you're going to lose superintendents to other states. You know what his response was? Bye-bye. He's not too concerned. Look,
Is there any stipulation on how long this cap? Is this a permanent cap? Is this something that's just as long as there's a deficit? Or
I think I remember reading 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For the coming 5 years. Yeah.
Look, you know, this is a great point. Like, if your local school district is saying, we have cut already to the bone with this fiscal crisis, we have nothing left to cut, it would be worth asking, how much does your superintendent make? Other top administrators? Good questions to ask. Okay, topic number three.
Topic three. Wake County, North Carolina has decided to reverse its policy of income-based school busing in the county, basically going to return to a community schools model where kids are going to go to school near their home as opposed to wherever they need to go to make that particular school diverse. Is this a good thing or a bad thing, Mike?
Well, so there's been some press lately, a really good Associated Press article about what's going on in Wake County right now. Huge protests. There's starting to be some very heartfelt, strong feelings on both sides of this issue, and it's getting a little bit ugly and hard to watch. I mean, look, Fordham has generally said, look, we got to focus on achievement, you know, not focus on trying to move kids around all this bit. But at the same time, I've come to appreciate the importance of having integrated schools. And there's some reason to believe that these schools in Wake County are going to all of a sudden be dramatically less integrated by race and income than they were before. I mean, this is, I mean, what do you think, Janie? Shouldn't reformers care about this stuff too?
I think yes, because on some level it does have to do with achievement. When you look at Wake County scores, they actually are relatively high. And a lot of people say that is because of the program. You know, this has been a longstanding program that they've been doing for a long time. And it seems like it actually is making a positive difference. That said, you know, it really, I do feel for the parents that, you know, and the students who are busing 2 hours across city lines to, you know, go to an inner city school when they've, you know, they live in the suburbs, or kids even from the city who have to bus 2 hours out. It isn't a good permanent solution, I don't think, but I think by taking it away, you know, it is going to have some detrimental effects.
I mean, part of what's happened is that the demographics have changed in Wake County. They've had this huge influx of Hispanic families, most of whom are low income. That complicated the whole picture. And then you have what you have in most parts of the country, which is, you know, the exurbs are becoming populated by more and more white families, especially from other parts of the country. And so, and you know, in most exurbs, if you move in, you're a white family moving to the exurbs, you, as Gerald Grant said in one article, you expect a white school to come with it. And in Wake County, people are finding that's not the case. And you know what? I have a lot of sympathy for the school district that says, look, we're trying to do right by all of our kids and to provide a diverse environment.
Yes, one of the problems of having, you know, a school district that large is that, you know, what's the best policy for all of the students? I don't know.
All right. One last point, Janie. Of course, you and I wrote a report earlier this year about private public schools.
That's true.
And I think, as I recall, there were not as many of those schools in Wake County.
No, there were not.
You know, because of this program, where you found, you know, public schools, so-called public schools that serve nothing but wealthy kids. That wasn't something you found in Wake County. You see it in most other cities. I guess we're going to see it going forward. Okay, that's all the time we have for Part in the Gadfly. Janie, well played.
Thank you.
Folks, enjoy Janie. Don't worry, she'll be back for Rate That Reform. Can you tell we're stretched a little thin here during the summer at Fordham? By the way, Rick Hess, someday he's going to come back to us. Rick A., wherever you are out there, we're thinking of you. Okay, now it's time for everybody's favorite. It is time for the Research Minute.
Proud of Janie.
Was that good or what,
job.
Huh?
She rose to the challenge.
It's from your mentoring, Amber. Yes.
Yeah, Amber's got some great oversight.
Well, you know, when Rick and I are both gone, it'll be you and Janie all the way running the show. And then it'll be the research half hour.
There you go. You know it. it.
All right, Amber. So what are we talking about this week?
What are we talking about today? We've got a new study out from the Brown Center at Brookings that examines whether the Harlem Children's Zone Promise Academy outperforms other charter schools in New York City, not just regular public schools as previous gold standard studies have shown. So you may recall that the Promise Academy is that high-performing charter school that operates within a neighborhood-based system of education and social services in Harlem. It's been touted by President Obama and whatnot. So analysts compared one school, the Zone Promise Academy, to other charter schools in Manhattan and the Bronx. There were about 14 of them. They collected average reading and math scores over 3 years for several grades of students, converted them to percentile rankings, and adjusted the rankings to account for demographic and economic differences among the students. The bottom line, the Promise Academy ended up falling in the middle of the pack. In math, students ranked at the 55th percentile when scores were adjusted. In English language arts, they ranked 47th after the adjustments. Analysts conclude that the Harlem Children's Zone Promise Academy is a middling charter school, and other charter schools generate outcomes that are superior, and they don't have all of those services. A couple things of note, however, we're talking about a small descriptive study of 15 schools approximately, and three of those in the comparison group were KIPP schools. So the competition was pretty strong, meaning the middle of the pack in this sense is probably not too bad.
Now, let me get this right, Amber. This was a Brown Center report, as in involved Russ Whitehurst.
That's right.
And it was a descriptive study?
It was a descriptive study, in my opinion, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, obviously he couldn't do the level of rigor that, you know, other studies have done, mm-hmm. the Fryer study and whatnot, where you had the lottery-based assumptions right. and whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, and it just looked at the one school, mm-hmm. you know, because, I mean, there's just two to begin with, and the one is elementary, so it only had grade 3 scores. So, yeah, and then there are all these data limitations in terms of you got to have a certain, you know, grade and mm-hmm. the test score's got to be in the database. So it's just a very small sample.
But I think there's something to be said for the small sample, because if you really want to compare it to other schools with the same situation, you're going to look at the schools that are closest, you know, right? to the Promise Academy. Mm-hmm. And if other schools right next to it basically are doing better or, you
yeah,
know,
but
about the same.
That that they have this KIPP, when you're only talking about, you know, a little over a dozen schools and, you know, got three or four, you know, that are KIPP. Then that's important too to realize.
All right, so really, right, so middling is a little bit unfair. I mean, middling right. compared to some freaking awesome charter schools
yes. right.
that might be some of the best in the country. But this is important. I mean, you know, the subtext here is the debate, the broader, bolder debate that mm-hmm. says, you know, are all these extra social services, are they necessary? At least do they help improve student achievement? Mm-hmm. I mean, there could be benefits for these social services that have mm-hmm. nothing to do with the schools. But mm-hmm. in terms of kids learning, and it seems to say, look, you know, KIPP, which you could argue has social services built mm-hmm. into its model. I mean, the kids stay late, the teachers get really involved in their life, but they don't actually, you know, do all the things the Harlem Children's Zone does. But in terms right. of education, they do the stuff that matters.
That's right.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how much overlap there actually is, even though, you know, KIPP is just considered, you know, whatever, 8-3 school. I'm sure there's actually a lot that they do that does kind of mirror what's done in the Promise Academy and mm-hmm. the Harlem Children's Zone.
Absolutely. But, you know, so we should admit, like, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, schools that are charter schools and any public school that are getting great results, they're not just doing academics. They are doing right. these other things, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the long school day, I agree with Janie. I mean, I think you're seeing that at both these mm-hmm. schools. You know, I think, you know, they obviously didn't parse out all these different variables that are going on in both schools. So important point.
All right, Amber, what are we going to listen
to? So since we are talking about New York City, we have Empire State of Mind by Jay-Z and Alicia Keys.
Alicia. Love that song.
Fantastic.
I'm so proud of myself that I know that it's Alicia Keys.
How to pronounce it.
That was pretty good.
Thank you.
Did you know that too, Janie?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Sorry. I'm so unhip. Mm.
It's a pretty hip song choice, though. I'll give you that.
You know, I've been listening more to Pandora lately, and I should maybe catch up on some of these pop references. Janie, I'll ask you, to, like, who are some of these, you know.
Oh, because I'm the expert.
Young hipsters that I should be listening to.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you, Amber. It is now time for us to rate that reform. Welcome back to the show, Janie.
Thanks. It's been so long.
Now, you can't tell because this is an audio podcast, but she is now in the special Rate That Reform part of the set.
I have the Rate That Reform hat on. Yeah.
Yes.
It's great.
Very good. It's a cheesehead hat. It's a long story. Okay. What reform are we rating today?
Today, we're going to look at effort honor rolls. So, I don't know if you remember, 2 weeks ago, we talked about schools that were naming multiple valedictorians in their high school senior classes.
Didn't I see a segment on Fox and Friends about that that featured Amber Winkler?
You might have.
Just maybe.
But this time we're actually looking at effort honor rolls, which recognize students who may not be actual top academic performers, but who, kind of in the words of one school, consistently exhibit politeness, kindness, and respect towards others, and consistently work to the best of their abilities. So,
you have got to be kidding me.
Exactly. Okay. At first glance, seems pretty absurd. But I'm actually going to argue that, there is some value to this.
Oh, no.
Because, on some level, I think the idea behind it is quite sound. Recognizing students for positive attributes other than academics. Who doesn't want to get the likable award? And, schools obviously should be focused on academics, but no one's going to argue that it's actually bad for a student to recognize a good attitude and real hard work. So I think calling it an honor roll is a little misleading. It kind of, gives it maybe a little bit more prestige than it should get.
Maybe they should call it the butt kiss roll.
I think there's, there's value to recognizing that
brown nosing, we can come up with all kinds of other words.
Attitude is, a good quality. So, I'll give it a B. I actually kind of like it. I will give the disclaimer, though, that I think it shouldn't be necessarily an honor roll. It should be maybe one student who's recognized for being particularly outstanding. And
okay.
Yeah.
Right. Amber, what do you think about this?
Oh, man. It's making me queasy over here, Mike.
Yeah.
I mean,
what are you going to tell your Fox friends about
teacher's
this?
Teacher's pet. I mean, what do we want to call these? I mean, I just think, honor roll is deceiving. Once again, I think we need to care about, rewarding true academic achievement. And
but
I think that's
it goes beyond
misleading to call
pet,
that.
Though. It's not just saying someone who's sucking up to the teacher. It's, somewho...
So how are they measuring, Janie? Mm-hmm. How are they measuring kindness,
subjective.
Politeness? And
that's why I don't think it should be an honor roll. I think, that kind of invites even more, just kind of ambiguity than multiple valedictorians.
Right.
But
see, I think I understand that schools are focusing on character education. They want to promote certain values and attributes and things like that. That that's okay. But again, how do you make these distinctions? And if it turns out that lots of kids get on this role for having good character,
right.
What does that mean about the kids that don't get on
exactly.
the roll?
That's why I think it should be a one student kind of award, not a whole honor roll.
We're going to have the honor roll for kids with good character, and then we're going to have the FBI watch list for the other kids who are afraid might partake in major school violence.
Yeah, the potential thug award.
All right.
A slippery slope.
I don't know. I guess I'd put this in the category of, don't our schools have a lot of other things that they need to be worrying about right now?
I suppose.
Well, thank you, Janie. Excellent job today. Amber, fun to have you here for the
thank
bantering.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. We'll look for you on Fox News once
yoke-y
again.
Okie dokie. I keep waiting for a better topic, but this is what they give me.
Nice. Okay. Well, that's all the time we have. Until next time.
I'm Janie Skull.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's Education Gadfly Show. You can always check us out at edexcellence.net. And hey, tell all your friends about us, too. I'm signing off.